It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
The Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe plug-in hybrid is built for the best of both worlds. For the city buzz, for the call of the wild, for finding solitude, for sharing memories, for day trips, and for far-roaming adventures. Because with gas and electric capability, the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe inspires you to explore more, to explore it all. Tap the banner to learn more. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
CeraVe facial moisturizers with SPF protect skin against damaging UV rays and continuously deliver three essential ceramides to help restore skin's protective barrier so it can lock in moisture. Non-greasy, fragrance-free, and won't clog pores? With CeraVe, skin feels hydrated and looks healthy all day. CeraVe facial moisturizers with SPF from the number one dermatologist recommended facial moisturizer brand.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring. Boring.
Hey, one thing the game needs is more people like you.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
It's Mookie Betts.
This is Daniel Bard.
It's Steve Aoki.
Jared Saltalamacchia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball
isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Radford.
Fly ball, right field. It's deep. It's going to go. It is gone. Two-run home run. The Phillies have become homer happy tonight. 5-0 Phillies. First of the year for Bryson Stott.
I hope everybody's having a great week and a great day. We hope that Baseball Isn't Boring has made it a little bit better as the week has gone on and as we head into the weekend. Well, we're going to keep trying. We're going to try to punctuate. The weekday is here. We tried to do it first off with a home run call of the day. Tom McCarthy with a home run call. Bryson Stott. Excellent job. Bryson was on the podcast a little bit earlier last month, in fact, talking about how the Phillies may have the best clubhouse in all of baseball. Well, remains to be seen. We're seeing things unfold. We're seeing the standings unfold. We're seeing the performances unfold. All of that. Well, one performance that has unfolded, if you stopped at the end of spring training and said, you know, I think this guy is going to be one of the biggest storylines of baseball, probably wouldn't be at the top of the list. Ronel Blanco is a guy who pitches for the Houston Astros. Made the team, made the rotation, basically with his last start in the spring training. And then, lo and behold, he throws a no-hitter. Then he throws five more innings of no-hit ball the start after. Everyone's Googling Johnny Vandermeer. In case you don't know, Johnny Vandermeer, the guy who actually pitched back-to-back no-hitters. But Blanco is a fascinating guy, not only because he pitched a no-hitter, but not only because he's gotten off to the start, but because of this is a guy who signed so late in his relatively in his adult life when it comes to international signings. He signed at 22 years old. That isn't the norm typically, and he takes the path and he throws a no-hitter at the age of 30. All right, so how does Blanco land where he landed as one of the top storylines in baseball? Well, we add on a guy who's a fascinating guy, great guy, assistant GM of the Miami Marlins, Oz Ocampo, who was working for the Houston Astros and helped find all those pitchers. All that talent was a big part of that whole deal. And one of those pitchers, obviously, is Blanco. And that's what we're focusing on today. Oz is so good to talk to. We appreciate him coming on, breaking down exactly what led Blanco to the Houston Astros, what his story was, And also, this throws in a couple good stories along the way about scouting, which is always great. We always appreciate it. But great guy to have on, especially considering that Blanco is scheduled to pitch on Saturday. So this will get you ready for that start. You'll never look at him the same way again. You've already looked at him in a different way because he's thrown a no-hitter and got off to such a great start. And it is one of the biggest stories in all of baseball. All right. At BB isn't boring. At BB isn't boring. In case you missed it. A Baseball Isn't Boring on the Go, which I had a lot of fun with Lucas Giolito talking about Curb Your Enthusiasm versus Seinfeld. Why did we talk to Lucas Giolito about that? Because Lucas Giolito's granddad was an actor on Seinfeld. So you're going to want to go back after you listen to this, after you listen to Oz. Take some time to listen to Lucas Giolito. Break it down. Curb Your Enthusiasm coming to a conclusion. There's no better way to punctuate it than a conversation with Lucas Giolito. All right, well, again, that was yesterday. That was a Baseball Isn't Boring on the Go. Today, morning podcast, Oz Ocampo. Here you go. Here's Oz.
All right, Oz Ocampo is one of the best baseball executives out there. That's how I'm going to introduce you, Oz. There you go. There's nobody I'd rather have on right now. I really appreciate you taking the time. And how are you, first of all?
Doing well, Rob. Appreciate it.
Listen, it's his facts, it's science, it's track record, it's all of the above. So I've admired your work for a long time, and I'm really super happy to have you on here. And the impetus that I finally said, okay, let's get Oz on, is Ronel Blanco. I apologize. I'm terrible at pronouncing names. So I'm probably going to butcher Blanco, which is, I'm going to butcher about five names in this podcast. But it's still, you've had so many great success stories, Oz. And the first question I guess I have for you is, when you look at these guys, whether it's you're in the organization, out of the organization, you know, three levels away from the guy, whatever it is, once you're tied to a guy, because part of this is relationship building, right? I mean, this is a big, big part of it. You must, when something good happens to anybody, you must be like, yes, yes, you know?
I mean, we started the process with these players since the beginning. And so from the time they signed, and even from the time before that, when we were scouting them, that's when you begin the relationship with them and also with their families. And that's where it all begins. And so not just me, but, and I've said it, it takes a village. It's an entire village of people that have been with all of these players, Ronel, and all the players that we've signed from the beginning all the way through their minor league career and through their big league career. And so to be a part of that has just been has been incredible, amazing for all of us involved.
When you're first starting off, Oz, was when it comes to the relationship building, because that's a tricky thing. It's like with writers, you know, they know how to write. They went to journalism school. They know how to form sentences, but it's relationship building goes a long, long way. Like, you know how to evaluate talent, but it's also, hey, I got to get the develop a relationship, not only with the player, but with the family, with the friends and everything else. When you're first coming up, is there someone that you watched? Was there a mentor? Is there something, do you feel like you evolved in that way? Talk a little bit about that process.
So that's an interesting question. So some of it is just the process of evaluating a player. So when we evaluate a player, we evaluate obviously the raw tools and the skills of the player, but on top of that, their makeup, their character, their work ethic, their competitive nature, all of those aspects. I think, so that's part of it. It's part of our job as evaluators to understand both the player and the person. I think part of it, for me personally as well, is that I grew up with my parents owning a deli, just a small corner deli. And from age 7 to 15, I worked in that corner deli every single day. And so my responsibility was to the customers. And so my job was to be able to be responsive to the customers, but basically people that became friends and like, and part of the extended family in our little corner deli in Bergenfield, New Jersey over time. And so I think part of it comes from that. I think part of it also comes from just my upbringing and like going to Georgetown and understanding this concept of cura personalis, which is care for the entire person. So all the different aspects related to the person, not just the professional, but the personal as well. So I think it's all of that. And it's something that you tried to embody and also value. Understand the value of really understanding a person and having very high care for every individual that comes through the system.
I knew you were going to give a good answer, but I didn't think you were going to give that good answer. That was a really good. I mean, let's plug the deli. Do your parents still own it, or
they do not? We sold it when I was a sophomore in high school.
Okay,
so, worked there after school every day.
That's what I do.
Monday through Sunday, and you know, we were only off for 6 days a year. It was listed on the little enclosed cards. So, but that's where I learned a lot, just in terms of working life and baseball.
But so before we move on, because again, this is maybe something that nobody cares about but me. So when you're working at the deli, and you're talking about your relationship with the customer, what is the thing that tested the most patience? Was it like the scooping the potato salad of getting it just right? Or, you know, what was the thing that, because this is, it's one thing to develop relationships with outgoing people and people who are friendly, but you don't always have that luxury. So what was the thing at the deli?
So the people part of it was actually great. I mean, I just remember really good relationships with people. I knew which teams everybody supported. I knew the lottery numbers for different people. It was the mopping the floors when the deli closed, and then locking up the register and that piece of it when you wanted to just finish up. And so just it was that part that was probably the most annoying, I would say.
Well, that's fair. So this is going to be perfect transition. The mopping the floor for scouting and finding talent is traveling around, going to places which, you know, bad fields, bad roads, you know, out of nowhere places. For Ronell, let's go back to Ronell because he's the man of the hour or man of the first couple of weeks of baseball. Talk to me about when you first got a chance to see him play. Now, this was a while ago. I mean, his story is pretty unique, right? I mean, he signed fairly late, in, I guess, relatively late in his adult life and compared to a lot of the others. So, but what do you remember? Because he was an outfielder or infielder initially, right? So what do you remember about first seeing your first interaction with him?
Yeah, I just remember that. So first of all, our area scout in the north of Dominican, Francis Mojica, he identified Ronell and brought him to the complex. Ronell was working out at the same complex as Julio Rodriguez. And so Mojica brought him to the complex. Roman Okumaris, our supervisor, evaluated him. And then we talked through him and we saw him and saw the video and just saw the things that we look for in a pitcher. And so he had a really good delivery, arm action, really solid fastball. He's up to 95, had a decent breaking ball, decent changeup, not like it is now. The credit to the development people that have worked with him for all this time. But the thing that stood out with Ronell more than anything was that he was very focused and dedicated from day one. He was dedicated to his craft. He wanted to work hard. He was committed to doing whatever it took to get better. And that never changed. His consistency from day one up until today, and we know it's going to continue, is remarkable. And it's the reason why he was able to get to where he is right now and have the success he's had.
So he signs at 22, right? Correct?
Yep, 22 okay. years
so
old.
So take me through the years before that, if you can. Because when people see that, when they see Ronell, and obviously he made his major league debut a couple years ago, but they say, oh, the guy who is not a lot of major league outings and he's 30 years old. So what was the story leading up? Well, he signed at 22. What was it like? What was the Ronell story before leading up to he signed?
So we had seen him just scouting in Santiago. So prior to that, I had not had any prior looks to that. I don't know if potentially one of our area scouts might have seen him before that. But I know that he was a position player, like a lot of these older pitchers tend to be. There are position players that weren't able to sign as position players and then transitioned to pitching. And he persevered through that transition to be able to sign at age 22. Most players, frankly, quit before then, but he was very persistent, and it was his mother that was very supportive, Maria, that was very supportive and encouraging him, and also him himself that was so dedicated to try and pursue this dream, and he was willing to do it even at age 22, looking for an opportunity to sign, and so we were fortunate that we were able to see him, then evaluate him, and then bring him into our organization.
I mean, that it's a fine line, right? It's where you love that drive in somebody, and somebody saying, "I'm not giving up, I'm not giving up, I'm not giving up," and you're like, "Well, okay, you know," but at some point we have to be realistic. But obviously, he had enough talent the combination of his drive, not giving up, and hey, we're gonna give you a go, you know. So I mean, and you mentioned his mother too. It goes back to what we were talking about. The fact is that you have to know that, hey, who's steering him in this direction, who's steering him in that direction. And when you're deciding his mother, that tells me that you knew that he had a pretty good support system.
So, I mean, I have to, again, go back to our scouts, our operations staff, player development, just everybody across the board that were supporting him throughout this time. And the operations staff, when I worked with the Astros, in particular, Pariad Cabrera, one of the things that they did was they had a parents orientation for all the families of the players that signed, and to show that our commitment was not only to the player, but to the families as well. And that was a unique concept at the time. I believe some other clubs are doing it now, but we understand that. So here are the odds of making it to the big league. So if you sign as an international player, as an amateur, and you sign, your odds are making it to the big leagues are 5%. It's extremely low. And then if you sign for 25,000 or 10,000 or below, you're talking about a 0.5% chance of making it to the bigs. And so we understood that the odds were really incredibly difficult. And so the only way to do it would be to support not only the player, but the person as well in any way we possibly could.
So, which, by the way, that's awesome. Like it's such a good idea. And I'm glad that other organizations are doing it now too. But so when you're following the kid, this is another part of this, which is unique, is that you sign the kid, the guy, and now you're following him. What do you remember about his path? Because if you go from 22 to what he makes his major league debut in 28, there's 5 or 6 seasons of is he going to work out the way that we thought he was going to work out? What was that like for you?
I know that works.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, just following his progress and seeing how he performed and did the work every year. I think one thing was that he did perform, and so he did well as he moved up through the system, and the stuff was solid but not fully major league ready. As he got closer and closer to the big leagues, he did get better, but he was kind of an edge like a borderline case in terms of making that jump or not. Fortunately, the development staff did an incredible job with developing his secondary pitches, and then also, you know, the changeup that he featured so prominently in the no-hitter. And I think on top of that, just watching him every year in winter ball, like this is a part of the story that people aren't really as aware of. Every year he pitched winter ball, and he pitched with great success, and he faced hitters that were of high caliber, and he basically added an extra season of development every step of the way every year. And so I think that also accelerated his development and allowed him to overcome the odds that were so stacked against him.
It's incredible. I mean, that's the development is unbelievable. And so when you talk about he's developing, and maybe as simple as you're talking about his changeup, was there a time where you started seeing, okay, he's actually taking this turn toward major league success that we saw in him? Again, maybe it was developing the changeup. I don't know what, but you remember when you started thinking, hey, this is going to work out for this guy.
Yeah, when he was in Double-A and Triple-A and he was performing, and you could see the stuff play, and then you could also see play in winter ball. When he's that close and you can see the confidence that he has, as well as just the ability to be a quality two-pitch pitcher at that time. Like you saw that he would have a chance to be at least a reliever at some point. And make it. And then once he got up there, it was really up to him. And, you know, we've seen what's happened since.
Oh, speaking of what happened since, and this is the cliche question, but Oz, where were you? Where were you when the no-hitter was going on? Like, were you watching him? Were you following? Yes.
I was at home, and I was getting texts from a bunch of different people. And then I checked on Twitter to see what was going on. And then I saw that the no-no was happening. And so seventh, end of seventh, eighth inning, turned it on and just watched the last couple outs of the thing. And I was on the edge of my seat. It's just very, very, I mean, just knowing what Ronel has gone through up to this point to get to here and, you know, obviously make the starting rotation opening day. I mean, that's such a huge accomplishment. And then do that in his first start. I was on the edge of my seat, and then Abreu made that play, and then he punched out Vladdy, and then we were all celebrating.
Well, you've obviously gone through this before. I mean, you've had no hitter anxiety before.
It's my 21-year-old self would not have believed that would have been possible, but yeah, it's happened a couple times.
So did you get a chance? I don't know if you'd be able to communicate with him, and that's obviously the next time out. We're watching him now. It's in national TV, and everyone's, you know, citing Johnny Vandermeer and everything else, you know, but I don't know why, if you're like, oh my goodness, like this, the run that this guy is on, and is, I don't know if you were following the second outing or not.
I was. So, so in between starts, I texted him, reached out. I said, congratulations on the success. And he said, thank you. Thanks so much for everything up to this point. And then, second no hitter, same deal, started getting messages, and then saw on Twitter, and then started following again. I was like, and I had to check the box score, just take a double take, because I wasn't sure if it was actually real or not, but there, sure enough, he was through five, No. So
yeah, I mean,
incredible to watch.
Oh, just it's been such a great story, and like your perspective of it is so awesome. I really appreciate it. I do like want to finish things off. I told you before, I love the scouting stories. Maybe Oz, it's as simple as the crappiest car that you had to drive around in a rental. I don't know, but like, is there a good scout? Because what you have done and continue to do, like traveling around and everything else, it's like people want to get into baseball and they want to have success stories, but it's hard, man. Like, it's hard. But along the way, there's also some unique stories. I don't know if you have one good scouting story for me that jumps to mind.
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple that I probably can't share, just how okay. crazy they were. But I do remember one where we drove up to the middle of nowhere, Dominican, and then reached a river. And then after the river, like a small little like brook or a stream or something like that, but we couldn't cross it with a car. And so we had to basically Oregon Trail style, like ford the river and to get across, and then jump on a motorbike after that. And then eventually take the motorbike over to the place to see the player. So.
See, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. So, yeah, man. Well, I appreciate it. And again, congratulations on all your previous success, continued success, and I really appreciate you joining us. So again, t-shirts are on the way, man. T-shirts are on the way. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks.
It's winner take all time in the NBA and NHL, and FanDuel's giving you a shot to bring home a big win of your own. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 bet. That's $150 to bet on spreads, money lines, player props, and more. Visit FanDuel.com/sportsfan and make every playoff shot count. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.